and welcome to the Dr. Squeeze Show podcast, featuring all the best bits from my radio show this week. Remember, if you want to listen in live and hear all the music, which we have to cut out of this podcast for rights reasons, please go to thebear.live every Thursday, 8 p.m. till 10 p.m. GMT. Thank you very much and enjoy this week's show.
Welcome to the show with your friend and mine. So tell me, Dr. Squee, who's it gonna be this time? We like to hear you talk, and we love to hear you listen. And if you are not subscribed, you won't know what you're missing. So welcome to the Dr. Squee Show. Welcome to the Dr. Squee Show. Welcome to the Dr. Squee Show. Headphones up. Here we go.
Hi, this is Bill Obrist Jr., and you're listening to the Dr. Squee Show here on The Bear. Stay tuned. Don't leave. Don't make me go all creepy on your ass.
Hello and welcome to the Dr. Squee Show. I'm Dr. Squee, and this is my show. We've got a very exciting, packed show again for you this week. We have got our review of the WandaVision finale. What an amazing show that has been. We've enjoyed the whole season. And I'm joined once again by James King from Retrek Podcast and Papa Bear Paul G from Who News to talk about that exciting finale. Not only that, but I've got Mackenzie Fleur, the amazing fantasy author behind the Rite of Wands series of books, as well as being public speaker. She's from the Legend of the Traveling TARDIS podcast, and she is multiple award winning. As well as all that, though, as always, we've got the big question of the week, which this week, it was just a few days ago, International Women's Day. So our question of the week is, a big question of the week, is what women inspired you? And I'm joined by my special lady to talk about this special woman's subject, because she's a woman. Please welcome Nicola Gosling.
Oh, yeah. Benny. Don't forget Benny. Say hi, Benny. Hello.
Now, that little annoying noise you all have heard on the microphone is Benny nudging the microphone, basically.
Hi.
Yeah, but he didn't say hi. He went and like just...
out there will be going, hi, Benny. Because they would have heard him.
What was him they nudging know. The microphone they a know. Doggy sign?
Yeah, they all know.
Okay. So, Nicola, you're going to join us. You are joining us because you've got an answer to the big question of the week. So we'll build up to that in 1 second. Mm-hmm. But I've got a few which were given to us by the dear listeners.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So we've got Thomas Beckett has put, my nan was an angel, always happy and smiling, baked the most fantastic cakes, worked hard all her life, cuddly and warm. I admire the Queen for her determination and hard work. I feel that she is the one keeping this whole circus of the UK together. Not everyone may agree, but that's cool. I wonder if she regrets being who she is. Maybe she would rather be a shop assistant, retire in her 60s, and sit in front of TV drinking hot chocolate instead of being all perfect all the time. Okay, that's all good.
Oh, I got confused because when you went, I admire the Queen, I thought he was calling his nan the Queen.
No, I think that's just general Queen admiration.
Which is me, yeah, no. Well, absolutely, but I was just, yeah, I got confused.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Have you suddenly become posh because it was a result of talking about the Queen?
Yeah. But now I got confused because I thought we were talking about still nan.
I mean,
who is the Queen of that house? So
yeah, it's sort of funny that we should be speaking about the Queen this week, given the interview that went out. But we'll leave
Meghan,
Harry and Meggles, as I believe she prefers to be called. We'll leave her and her Oprah interview alone. Ali Cummings, our friend of the show, has put, my great gran lived through 2 world wars. She was widowed at 45, midway through the Second World War, and left with a 17-year-old and a business to run on her own. She never had another partner. She was utterly devoted to the memory of my great-grandfather all her life. She was a kind, strong lady, a true Welsh nana. I would do anything for her... and would do anything for her family. Her body gave up, but her mind was sharp and vibrant until she died. before her, just before her 97th birthday. Oh, that's a great old age. She's not changed the world, but she lived her life with such dignity and strength, such goodness. She is the kindest woman I strive to be like. That's just wonderful, isn't it?
It is. That's amazing. No, they both sound like lovely ladies who we've just heard.
So, Max Ice, my coaster, by the way, from the Forza Crowd podcast, which you can get now on your favourite podcatcher. It's a weekly sitcom podcast. Well, I say weekly, about bi-weekly, it was released. It's all about a narrator played by me and some other people who do some other stuff. No, it's about people in their 30s finding love, which is kind of cool. And the wacky dating scene on which they find themselves.
You did that in your 30s.
Yeah, look what happened to me.
I know. Lucky boy.
Yeah, we'll go with that. And we've Max Ice has put Lady Gaga for her unwavering support and dedication fighting for human rights and acceptance of the LGBTQ communities. She is an inspiration and helped me through some of the darkest years of my life. Well, I can't think of anything better than that. Why to nominate a woman for the most inspirational for you. I'll tell you what, I'm going to save mine for later in the show. I do say one in the interview, the review I did with Paul and James of WandaVision, but I've got another one I'd like to nominate later on in the show. But Nicola, what's your woman you would like to nominate as the most inspirational to you?
Well, if I have to keep running around after Benny in this room, I'm going to give him some inspiration to think about in a minute.
He would, of course, say his mummy, his bumhole. Family show, Nicola, just because I say fuck
He's
quite often on it.
Our 7 of 9, our life-size 7 of 9.
Look, I've had thoughts about eating 7 of 9, but it's been very different from what he's doing.
Yeah. He would have more luck.
Probably.
Right, you want me to talk about my inspirational person? Inspirational woman.
Okay, let's pretend for a moment that women are people. Okay,
oh,
go on.
Oh, God, let's do that, shall we?
Hey, look, I am an equal rights activist. I believe women should be treated as if they're equal to men.
Oh, really? Only because you wish you were equal.
And Benny's just going to try and eat a box while we're doing this. Look, this is live radio when you've got a dog in the room. What can I say?
Benny is leaving the building.
Benny is now getting executed from the studio.
Executed
from the studio. Excluded from the studio. Look, he's been chucked out.
Executed sounds like...
You know you're off mic now. You're far away from the microphone. You can't just say stuff as if anyone's going to hear you.
Sorry, hello, I'm back. He has exited the building. Benny has left the building.
So you're inspirational woman, Nicola. God, this is so ramshackle, this show already. You don't need to bring it down from the low level it was already
you
at.
You always know what I'm like on thing, and you always ask me to come on.
Yeah, I don't learn. It's all fair.
Do it to yourself. My inspirational woman.
Which, it might be easier if I had, but I chose to be with you.
You might still be going that way. Who knows? My inspirational woman. So I was thinking about this, and I was thinking a lot about historical. Well, obviously, as long as I'm in that family, my mum's amazing. And et cetera, et cetera. But I was also thinking about historical women. I thought, I was thinking about suffragettes and all these amazing women, that inspiration. But there was one thing that I think about every now and again. It was a story I'd heard. It was something on maybe Comic Relief or something like that. And it was done, I can't remember which country. I'm just going to sort of maybe pluck Africa out, because that's where they mainly sort of do these clips and things. And it was about this woman that had to walk miles and miles for her child to do something, because her child was ill. But it wasn't just that. It was the fact that this woman actually, something had happened to her arm and it went gangrenous. And halfway on this travel to get her child there, she had to actually remove her own arm to save her own life. And that kind of sticks with me because I think, it's not about sort of, I know not every woman goes around ripping their arms off, but, for all these women that fight every day and whatever it is, whatever, you're doing physically or mentally. And for me, that one woman, I just think about every now and again, that the strength women have and the extents women will go to. We're just strong old beings. We really are.
No, I mean, I will say that I am so respectful of anyone who goes through mental health issues or any other daily problems with lives. But there is something, again, to these women who live in poverty all their lives, whose only purpose and only goal in life is to make sure their kids survived another day sometimes. And to do that and to get to the point where you literally rip your own arm off.
Yeah, she had to remove her arm to actually save her life, to continue on to for a child. But it's not, I mean, that's the story there. But for me, it's just the extent women will go to under any circumstance with any story, you know, how the strength we, you know, we all have.
Yep, I can't do better than that. I am going to now go to our first tune in just a second. Tonight we're going to be playing a few extra women-focused tunes, either kind of from strong female artists, from some which have been nominated by some of our guests as to songs they want to go out to the favourite lady in their life. I'd like to dedicate this to Nicola here. It's got nothing to do with her because it's geared towards the WandaVision, but like, I will dedicate it to you. And it's from, look, we were talking about the Queen before. This is from Queen, right? You know, so, you know, natural link. I think you'll find smooth as hell. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this is by Queen. And this is, it's kind of magic going into WandaVision, you see, because that's about magic. And it's WandaVision, and it's Queen, you see.
And you said the Queen, then said smooth as hell, which might link into all the shit that's going on at the moment. Just saying.
What?
I don't know.
I have no idea what that means, but okay, this is Queen, and it's a kind of magic.
It's a kind of magic. It's a kind of magic. A kind of magic. One dream, one soul, one prize, one goal.
I am joined by two men to help me talk about WandaVision, because after all, it is International Women's Day. So, you know, I got two white cis males. Yeah, look, they were available. What can I say? Please welcome Paul G from Who News.
Good evening.
And James King from Retro Pod.
Hello.
Now, it may seem to, like, the uneducated that I've been very, very, you know, just wrong-footed to have three men talking on International Women's Day, but of course we were all born of women. That counts, yeah?
Yep, guess my vote.
Anyway, look, it was just a coincidence. It happened to be International Women's Day. We're talking about a female-led show, kind of?
Yeah, definitely.
So, like, before I dig my hole any deeper, guys, let's talk some WandaVision. actually, first of all, how are you guys? How's everything going? How's the last days of lockdown treating you both?
Yeah, not bad, not bad. I got booked in for a jab, so yeah, there we go.
Nice. You see, you sleep through half a year and then you get your jab early. I just don't know what you're pulling here.
I think that's what I don't, to be honest, because I checked the list of things and I don't have the things. So I'm assuming it was that I died 2 years ago, so I'm thinking maybe I've got like a red flag on my medical file, so they've said, go on, we'll count you as vulnerable.
I mean, you die once and you never stop going on about it, James.
I know.
Paul, how are you?
Yeah, not so bad sort of thing. And actually, I haven't been called from a jab yet, which proves I'm actually a lot younger than you always make me out to be.
Yeah. You do anything for a little prick, you. No. Look, it's... I don't know where that even came from. I'm sorry, people. That was... I mean, are you sure you didn't just sleep through when you were due it?
No. I've received nothing. They must be... I've either missed me off sort of thing, or I'm just far too young, even though I look far too old.
Guys, don't worry. He just gets a bit confused sometimes. He's probably already had both the jabs. Just ignore him. Okay, look. We're here to talk about WandaVision, so what an exciting and amazing finale. I think it's fair to say they paid off on everything, certainly I wanted them to anyway, and they left enough mystery to kind of for the ongoing story. And they did that thing which Marvel is so good at doing, whereby, I've said, like, they either give you what you expected but in a way you didn't expect it, or they give you something completely different. You go, oh, no, that's better. I think they probably did the former in this case, whereby, you know, I kind of guessed a lot of the beats which were going to happen, but
not in the execution or the way they happened. James, what were your kind of first thoughts?
Yeah, I'm more or less there with you. I think we talked about it on the last episode and we had our predictions and things. And I think, yeah, we covered a lot of the beats that we expected to come up. And like you say, they did. But there was quite a twist on all of it. Like there was the Vision versus Vision fight, but it wasn't your standard someone versus the doppelganger. It got very philosophical with the ship of Theseus or... Everybody, I'm not the first to point this out, but it also brought to mind Trigger's broom in Only Fools and Horses.
You know, I think we'll save that. We'll get to that.
That's the metaphor. But yeah, so they took on a more philosophical sort of bent on it with that, and you had lots of spectacular stuff going on with Wanda and fighting what's-her-name, Agatha, and yeah, there was a lot going on. I thought overall it was really, really good.
Your first thoughts, Mr. G?
Yeah, it was a great finale to the seasons, and also for me it was a more action packed than I was expecting. I thought it was going to be a little bit slower, but it just kept, you know, it was almost relentless, the pace and the action, and it felt almost like an Avengers movie in some respects, you know, like obviously a mini one, but it was just relentless, and it was that in some ways took me by surprise. I wasn't expecting quite that. I was thought it was going to be drawing a lot of threads together and a lot more dialogue and a lot sort of slower pace than it actually was. So, but thoroughly enjoyed it. Excellent. So,
yeah, something I found out this week, which I didn't realize, was that it was actually directed all the way through by the same guy. And they kind of, apparently Marvel, when they went into TV, they were like, right, we want to get the spectacle of the movies. So let's kind of have the same writer and director through. I think they've split it up a bit going forward into other TV shows. But to begin with, just one guy kind of directing all that action and everything. So it's kind of quite an amazing feat. As we go into it, we're straight into the action. And you've got the WandaVision and the two Romanettes kind of fighting alongside her. And like, it is so easy when you're dealing with kid actors for it to get either too cutesy or not really to sell it. But man, like, I was in for those kids and just kick-ass kids just shooting fireballs, like shooting bolts out of their hands and whizzing all over the place and all this. What did you think of the kind of like opening scene, James, first of all?
Yeah, I really liked that. Like you say, they did a brilliant bit where they had Wanda and Vision and the two kids, and there was a musical cue which sort of evoked the Avengers theme when it first did that big spin around them. And I thought, you know, that was great. That was really clever. There was also like a bit of a visual gag, like you had the kid, sorry, I forget the kid's names, the kid who's Speedy. Nicked somebody's hat and glasses, which is what Quicksilver does in one of the X-Men films, you know, so there was a lot of little nods and winks, but we'll get on to Quicksilver probably later when we talk about things that didn't work as much. But yeah, I thought the action was brilliant, and it's one of those things now where it still always amazes me when they do people flying on a TV budget, because obviously, you know, the first Superman film in 1978 was You'll Believe a Man Can Fly, but that was exclusively to films. You could only do that with a film's budget, you know, and then you look at something like The New Adventures of Superman with Dean Cain and stuff, and not so much. And it has been one of those things that's always been out of the reach of TV until very, very recently. And particularly with these Disney Plus shows, like, this looks like a Marvel film, but it's on TV, and like The Mandalorian looked like Star Wars on TV, and it's still baffling that you can do that now. I mean, I know Disney have got endless pockets of money to throw at it, but the scope of it's just incredible that we can get that stuff now.
Yeah, I mean, I love the kind of opening where it's like, yeah, just Wanda, and kind of she sends the kids away, looks like she's getting her ass kicked by Agatha. And then Wanda just slamming... then it's kind of, of course, the White Vision comes in. Mm. And he's just crushing her head. And just the emotional payoff of having the person who she trusts and loves the most, who she doesn't know it's this kind of like other Vision, being the one who's kind of crushing you to death. And it's like, oh, they said you were powerful. It's just wonderfully creepy. And just to have our Vision kind of slam into the side of him. And it just does call to mind all those times when we've seen in different iterations Superman fighting himself. Like, it's interesting you picked up on that as well, because that's the first thing I thought of. Just, it was a Superman on fake Superman fight. That's what it called to mind of, without being really too much of a copy at the same time.
That's still the benchmark. I mean, I know people don't have a high opinion of Superman 3, and, you know, by and large, that's justified. But the Superman versus Clark Kent fight in Superman 3 is still the benchmark for this kind of thing. It's a fantastic sequence. It could have just probably done with a better film either side of it, but, you know, that's another topic, isn't it?
I mean, it sort of makes you feel like this is how that looked when you were a kid in your head. You know, that's how that scene... This scene looked as amazing. So when we see it, really, we're seeing it for the first time looking this spectacular and being such a visually magnificent scene. But it's that first film which had the imagination to do it that felt this spectacular. You know, it didn't feel like it was, you know, if you watch it back now with a critical eye, probably the kids would say, aren't going to see that as spectacular, because they see this all the time, you know. Oh, superhero fighting the evil version of themselves? Yeah, we do that every week on a different TV show. But it was new then to us, so it was just so amazing. And this just gave me that kind of feeling again. Paul, what did you think of the vision-on-vision action?
It was outstanding. Sort of thing. And I think it was... Obviously, Vision looked like Vision, but sort of the new white Vision sort of thing, he was subtly different, and he looked harder, and he looked more... you know, more almost like, you know, machine-based, Android-based, rather than Vision, who has a much more human quality about him. And I thought they did that really well. And you know, and it seemed like Vision had the, you know, he had the experience to fight against the, you know, this sort of like evil counterpart sort of thing. But it seemed as the fight progressed, you saw more and more of the same characteristics coming through, the phasing, those, you know, which he didn't seem to do at the beginning. It seemed to be much more sort of, you know, sort of just straight on, just power, as a, and then other things started to come in as the fight developed, sort of thing. And the thing I really liked about was with the kids was the fact that they had powers, but they were like scaled down mini powers, sort of thing. So they weren't supremely powerful, sort of thing, but it was just enough for them to be useful and helpful, and they had their one little, and it was really, really well done. And once again, as you say, the kids, they could have come across as sort of like being, you know, just obnoxious or annoying, sort of thing, but they weren't. They were kids that you actually liked, and the powers were, you know, just complimented them, sort of thing, and they were just helping their mum, trying to protect their mum. I thought it was really, really well done, really well balanced.
And the good thing which I loved about it, which made it more real world, I hate it kind of in the films where the kids just ignore their parents and go, no, I'm going to go off and fight the big bad. I'm going to, like, and they end up being the hero, and it's just, it's cheesy, basically. But they had a nice, like, couple of little pieces and a couple of nice bits of action. When the mum goes, no, you get out of here, you stay safe, they did it. They respond to their parent. And it's just nice to see, just for the change, if nothing else. And it just felt a bit more realistic to me. They got to see something cool, but then they went away and let the grody ups fight. Like, that's kind of what we want to see at the end of the day. And just the whole thing of the thing, which, like, you know, obviously it is not like me or, of course, Paul G to talk about Doctor Who at all. But on this occasion, one thing which I did think was when you've got the kind of two basically fake visions as it's revealed, it just reminded me of the line of when Rory, who's one of the Doctor Who companions, for anyone who doesn't know, is being the last Centurion. So basically, he becomes a kind of autumn plastic version of himself, like a fake version of himself. And he kind of offers to kind of stand guard over this kind of this square object, which, like, is called the Pandorica, which is going to, like, house his wife in it for 1,000 years in suspended animation. And because he's not real, he can do that. And the dog, you know, he's going, it's like, look, I'm going to do this because otherwise she won't be safe. And the dog says, like, why do you have to be so human? And he says, because right now I'm not. Now, that's my long-ass way of saying that's what the vision made me feel like. It's like, throughout this whole show, the thing which has been so stunning to me about Paul Bettany's portrayal and the way it's written and all this is that this is probably the most vision he's ever been in this show when he's not. Like, the Scarlet Witch, like Wanda, she created such a good version of him that he worked independently. He worked even against her to try and find out what was going on. Like, you'd think with all her power she could reset it, but like, she made him so much him that she couldn't stop him being him. You know, it's that's what I love. So when you do get this scene where the two visions are squaring off and they've just slammed into each other a bunch of times, they're in the, is it church? They're in chapel? Whatever building they're in. And they're facing off against each other and they're about to like slam down and kind of like burn holes in each other. Sorry, and I'm getting distracted by a very cute doggy. Hello. But it's when they're about to slam down and then their solution is to, like, as they're powering up their lasers, basically, is to just power down and go, right, I've got a logic problem for you, other me. Great, I'm in. And but it doesn't feel nerdy and it doesn't feel like a letdown because it is so kind of like, so the vision, so appropriate to the character. You know, whereas another character, you'd be disappointed if they didn't fight. If it's Falcon and the Winter Soldier, you'd expect a big fight scene. In this scene, or even with Wanda, you'd expect a big witch fight like you get. With this scene, it was about two men of logic figuring out who the hell they are when they're not themselves. Like, one is the body, one is the mind, and like the ship of Theseus, one is the replaced wooden beams over the ear, and the other one is the decayed beams which are worn down, or some shit like this. I don't quite, I get it, but I don't, but like, it's just, it's a lovely logic puzzle which proves they're both a vision, and then they team up as one thing, and then they go and kick ass. Lovely. Okay, yeah. I need to breathe. One of you go.
Yeah,
it was, as I said, it's, I love the whole philosophical thing that they get into with the, are either of us the real Vision? No, we're not, but yes, we are as well. And it comes down to that thing of, you know, what makes a person a person? And we aren't given a direct answer in this, which I think is wise. And it comes back again at the end of the episode when Vision says something brilliant about, like, you know, I was a disembodied AI, and then I was this, then I was that. And what will I be next, kind of thing. And I love that aspect of the character that they're really getting into, because Vision, even though he's been in quite a few of the films, we haven't had a lot of time to get to know him and get to explore this sort of philosophical side and the implications of it and how he was made and what is he and everything. And it's really good that we're getting to do that on with the format of a TV show, because, you know, he's always just been in Avengers films, but he was in Captain America Civil War, which, you know, was pretty much Avengers 2.5. So it's all sort of action, action, action when we've seen Vision before. So it has been nice to kind of explore these things. And yeah, everyone's, this Ship of Theseus thing seems to have really caught on now. So
yeah, it seems, I mean, the same thing with Wanda, because there was a kind of like cut put online of all the scenes with Wanda, and it's about 20 minutes, half an hour from all the films she's been in to date up until this point. So even though you feel like you know her, she was such a blank canvas to create this show on.
Yeah.
And both the characters were just so, such powerful ideas that it was nice to kind of finally give them the chance to kind of flesh out here. But one thing which I was curious about, when you've got the two visions and one of them flies out of the building, like, I think that's the body of Vision given after their mind meld has got all the information and then flies out.
The white one disappears, don't they, at this point? The white
one. So it's the white one which disappears. It's the color one. It was the one which was already in color, which flies out, yeah? So no, the black. No,
It was the white one that flew out, wasn't it?
So, yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah. He flies out, and then he's in color now. Yeah.
No, I thought he just zoomed off.
White, but the vision that we've been following all season sort of transferred something to him, and they kind of both became whole through that. So basically, I think White Vision now can come back in some future Marvel project and to all intents and purposes will be Vision again.
Yeah.
That's what I'm wondering, because at the end, obviously, the kind of world collapses, but you've still got this body of Vision which doesn't get mentioned again. It kind of just disappeared. Yeah, I was just a bit confused because it seemed like they kind of did the mind meld, and then white vision seems to fly off, and then we see colored vision coming out the building, like flying through the building. So I wasn't sure if it kind of white vision became color or color vision flew off and the white vision got off.
White vision is off there somewhere waiting for his casting call for WandaVision 2, if they do one, or Avengers 5 or whatever it is. But he'll Paul Bettany's not going to be out of work with Marvel. Yeah. Let's put it that way.
It's just, I just love that idea. And like, you know, we were saying about the lines, it's like just right at the end. It's, we keep on meeting again, then how can this, if we keep on saying goodbye, then we stand to reason that we'll meet again.
There'll be another hello sort of thing. Which, I don't know, arguably does that diminish this ending? Because it's not, I don't think it does, because we still get the emotional moment of this vision going, but there is going to be another vision that she's going to meet again. And that's when we get into the really interesting philosophical stuff of these. Well, is that vision Vision still? And if he is, then what was this? Were they both Vision? And, you know, that can get really interesting. And I think if they're going to explore that, they're going to have to do it in this TV format, because it's not going to sit right in the middle of an Avengers film. Maybe a little bit of lip service to it, but you need to really dive into that if you're going to do that.
That's interesting, because I don't think you get WandaVision series 2. I think whatever's going to be next is going to be something different again. Yeah. But I mean, getting back to WandaVision of it all, the other thing I want to touch on was the Pietro, or fake Pietro, or whatever we're calling him. I do like the whole thing of, like, obviously they find an actor show, it's like, your son is Boner. Like, it's just good fun times. But it still, for me, is very interesting that, especially with, I'm going to jump around a bit now. And by the way, sorry if I didn't say already, spoilers, a bit late. But I did like the fact that at the end of it, you see kind of one Wanda going out and chopping wood or doing whatever, and the other one's in the back reading a book, very a la Doctor Strange. Mm-hmm. You've got this fake Pietro who obviously, like they're saying, is an, you know, the body of an actor from this world. But if she can be in two places at once, which I think is a very multiverse suggesting, because, you know, Doctor Strange exists across many planes and many dimensions. That's why it can be in multiple places and whatnot. Maybe, I think that just, to me, again, I think they're going to do at least a nod to that in the multiverse somewhere along the line to that character. What do you think, Paul? You seem, you're giving your, you're not agreeing
there. I don't think that's it, basically. I think what you've got is what you've seen. I don't think there's any mileage in taking that further. I think it's just one of those things where,
even with a cameo?
Yeah, even with the cameo sort of thing, I think it's just a case. I mean, because it was Ralph. I mean, wasn't Ralph supposed to be Dottie's husband? He was like, he's off the off-screen husband, wasn't he? I believe. Yeah. So I think it is just a case of Agatha. She just used him. She created, she controlled him, and she just made him look like the brother. Yeah, we get the nods from that. It's from it's from one of the X-Men movies, and that's where it comes across. But I don't think it will go any further than that. So,
your thoughts, James?
Yeah, I'm with Paul largely on this. I think we've been a bit shortchanged by this, and I think the way it was done, I don't think Marvel were playing fair with the audience here. If you'd have just had this character turn up and say it was Pietro halfway through an episode, you'd have gone, I see what they've done. They've cast the guy out of the other one. Fair enough. But the fact that they brought him in for the last shot of an episode and then it was the cliffhanger and we had a week to wait, that they clearly knew that it was going to elicit this response in the fandom, and they clearly knew that they had no intention of paying that off in the same way. It's people have likened it to the trick they did with the Mandarin in Iron Man 3. But the difference there is that that's all dealt with within the film. So yeah, some people felt cheated by that. I thought it was very funny. But, you know, I can understand why people felt cheated by it. But at least the other shoe drops while you're still there. Whereas this, there he is, boom, all this speculation. They knew it was going to get all this speculation and all this crazy social media thing about it. And they also knew that he was just a guy who lived over the road called Boner or whatever he's called. And I don't think that's very fair. I think with what they actually did with him, they should have probably cast someone who looked a bit like Aaron Taylor-Johnson so that there's this idea of, oh, he looks a bit like my brother. Maybe it is him, maybe it's not. And you still get that element of, well, you knew it wasn't really your brother, Wanda. Whereas this, it just feels like stunt casting and it feels like deliberately misdirecting the audience. Even if they'd have paid it off in the very next episode, but they didn't, they left it until now, really. And yeah, I just think it's I think it's, to use an old sort of phrase, I think it's very bad form by that to do that.
I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if they still do a lot of something with it, but we'll see. But obviously we've danced around it, but like, let's get into the wonder of it all, of course. And just the scenes with her and Agatha. I love the fact that Agatha's basically been witch-splaining herself to her. And you've got this wonderful thing throughout the show where Wanda is kicking her ass and stealing her powers. And they're paying off the fact that you saw when you first saw her, or, you know, when you saw her origin story, that she was the one who sucked powers from people. And she's doing that with Wanda. She is torturing Wanda by making her see what she's done to these people. And then at the end to have that paid off with Wanda kind of like revealing she did set Hex, like, which does that suggest that she put that there at the beginning or she's put that there since? Like, I think what they're saying is she put it there to begin with and she knew who she was really, or knew something of who she was on some level at least. What do you think?
I thought that she'd put them there at some point in this episode before she confronted Agatha. Because she says, oh, thank you for telling me about the runes doing this. And I thought it was a great twist. I really like that where they take a detail from earlier on. And I'm trying to think of another example now. I can't off the top of my head. But it's been done many times where you have the villain does something and then the hero reappropriates it to win the day. And I thought it was very cleverly done. But, yeah, I'm not sure when she had the space to do it, but I did get the impression that that was done after she escaped from Agatha's basement, but before the reveal of it.
Yeah. But like, you know, but Paul, just diving back a little bit from that, those earlier bits where Agatha is just playing with her and just showing her, like, you know, oh, just when you've got Emma Caulfield, best known as Anya from Buffy, and she's there saying, oh, like, what, maybe you could cast my daughter? She's about the age of that kid. Like, maybe she could be his best friend. Like, please, anything would just be lovely to be around her. And just, like, the pleading and just the heartache of that. And Wanda just seeing what she's done, you know, like, the veil of her grief. This grief is kind of finally broken to just see what she's doing, playing with these people's lives. And then going to tear down the walls and kind of, you know, set these people free. Paul?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the really dark part of it, that is the fact that obviously you've got a mother who's pleading for her daughter to be released. And it kind of gave the impression that the children or some of the children were effectively just locked in rooms. You know, they didn't have a role. They didn't have a part to play. So they're just pushed somewhere. And, you know, and all these people have been suffering or starting to forget actually who they are. And so it comes back to what we think we said last week, sort of thing. There almost seems to be these like two aspects to Wanda's personality. There's sort of the personality at the front, the one that is caring, the one that is, you know, it does sort of grieve when she hears this. But clearly there's been this other aspect of her personality that has kept all these people suppressed, locked up, manipulated for her own purposes. And that's the very dark side of it. And that's almost what Agatha, I think, is like kind of hinting at, that, you know, there is this other side to the Scarlet Witch that she is now starting to release. And if you don't know what you're going to release, then you're about to, you know, you're going to find out pretty soon, I think. So,
yeah. And that was the interesting thing. So, yeah, Agatha, when she does get smacked down, she's saying, it's like, you don't know what you've unleashed here. You need me to control it. Just before Wanda consigns her, conveniently, it has to be said, to stay in this world, you know, stuck in a persona as the wacky next door neighbor, just ready to be pulled out in another film, of course. But I don't mind that at all. James, like, what do you think kind of the portents are, and what did you think of that bit where she kind of consigned to stay in this world?
Yeah, I mean, that it's very cruel what she does to Agatha. I mean, as you say, it functions on a plot level because we don't kill her so we can bring her back. But it's also a sadistic thing to do, and it's not becoming of what we'd expect from one of our heroes, which is really good because it shows that Wanda's still got a long way to go. She's got a lot of developing to do, and she's an interesting layered character. I think, you know, if we take it further sort of into the Marvel Universe, you know, one of the big things in Captain America Civil War was because Wanda made a mistake and accidentally killed people while out on an Avengers mission. And that's what started all this Sokovia Accords thing. And it does kind of make you go, well, maybe they kind of had a point with the Sokovia Accords, because she's done it again. You know, she's done so much.
How could you make two mistakes? You kill a bunch of people, then you accidentally imprison a bunch of others in this fictional town of sitcom. Girl, you've never made a mistake.
All I'm saying is, when Hawkeye gave her that big rousing speech in Age of Ultron saying, if you go out that door, you're an Avenger, blah, 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 he should have said, if you go out that door, you're an Avenger, in brackets, for the duration of this battle, then we will make sure you get proper psychological help. And I think that would have saved a lot of problems. But, you know.
Look, if you start featuring psychological help into the Avengers, I think a few of them got some issues. No,
how good would that show be? Like, did either of you guys see that show quite a few years ago now? And it was Gabriel Byrne, and he played a psychologist. And there were 5 episodes of it shown a week. And on Monday, he had one patient. Tuesday, he had another patient. And it ran for about 8 weeks. So you got 8 sessions with all these people. I don't think many people saw it, don't worry. But how cool would that be to have? And then you can do this on Disney Plus. You can go, okay, this is the Marvel psychologist, and get someone cool to play it, like, I don't know, Danny Trejo or someone, and he can come and see him, and you just have these little 10-minute snippets of a different Avenger coming in and talking about their issues. That'd be a fantastic show.
No, you get it hosted by Patrick Stewart, and then you never pay off that he was one of the X-Men.
That's even better, yeah.
And he sat there in a wheelchair, and he looks exactly like him, and they kind of tease that he might be him, but of course he's not in the end.
David Hasselhoff with an eye patch, and he's like the old Rory that he did that one time.
Deep cuts, sir, deep cuts.
I saw that either, thankfully. But yeah, something like that. But yeah, I think it's really interesting for Wanda and to see where she goes and everything, and obviously, that post-credits scene with the astral projection and everything is probably setting up Doctor Strange 2. I don't think that they've got anything on the slate between now and then that's likely to feature us.
Yeah, and you've got, of course, Rambo being sent to the stars after Nick Fury heavily suggested, at very least.
That's likely. Samuel L. Jackson's been confirmed that he's got a secret invasion show. Which Secret Invasion in the comics was all about the Skrulls infiltrating people, and they used it as a sneaky way to bring dead characters back to life, because they went, oh, actually, the Skrulls have been invading for years, so you remember when Elektra died? That was actually a Skrull, so here's the real Elektra. So if there's any characters that they've killed off and wish they hadn't, Secret Invasion could be a time to do that.
Interesting. Like, if nothing else, like, I think it might be unsatisfying if they bring people back for good, but if they bring them back just to kill them again, that wouldn't be cheating too much.
Well, they did. The other side of it was they had people come back and say, I'm the real Bucky or whoever, and it turned out they weren't. They were a Skrull who just thought they were, and so, you know, that, yeah, you can do all sorts with it, but I think that's where we'll see that's where we're going to see Monica Rambeau next, I would guess, is Secret Invasion.
I mean, just, yeah, the landing of this is just amazing, where it kind of sets everything up for, you know, I think going in, none of us were really sure how much they were going to, how much this was going to influence the Marvel world going forward. It probably would, of course, it was, of course, going to forward the Wanda and whatever future of the Vision there might be, their storylines. But I mean, they've really, there's lots changed in this. This kind of does change a lot and introduce a lot to be kind of done with later.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, when I first started watching it, sort of thing, I thought I did wonder if it was going to be like an Agent Carter kind of thing, where it's just on the sideline. It's an interesting, like, you know, path to explore. But actually, in, as you say, in terms of impact, it, in the Marvel Universe, it doesn't have a huge influence. But I think this will do. I think, you know, I think certainly when that, like, that post credits scene with, you know, Wanda with her sort of astral self sort of thing. I mean, there's clearly, I mean, I think Agatha had already sort of said earlier on sort of thing that she was like more Scarlet, which is more powerful than the Sorcerer Supreme sort of thing. And I think that was quite clear because if you've seen, you know, like, you see like Doctor Strange movies, you've obviously got Doctor Strange who's, you know, he's using his astral body, his actual real body is just, it's just laying down asleep, prostrate sort of thing. Whereas she was, you know, she was operating as two individual people sort of thing, implying that, you know, there's a, it is very much a separate entity that she can control, and it can do itself, you know, do its own thing. So
go up and chop some wood.
You talking about the like Agent Carter and whatnot, and I think now they have out and out committed to TV, now that they've got it all under their own control and they've got their own streaming service, we're going to see a lot more of it. It's like when Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. launched, there was all this big fanfare. It's part of the MCU, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, not so much. A couple of cameos.
Yeah, they gave an episode every now and again where it got to play with some toys.
It was kind of, if something happens in the films, we've got to acknowledge it, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. But if you do all, we're not bothered. Or you've introduced the Inhumans. Yeah, we're not ready for them yet. We'll do that later. And it, you get that with the book that she's reading, The Darkhold. And, I mean, I lost track of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but apparently that's a big thing in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but they've clearly just gone, you know what, nah, this is the real one now. So,
sorry, we want that back.
Yeah, you've had fun with it. Go, you know, you were on...
Oh, but we had another series where we were going to... Nope. Right, you're cancelled.
You're cancelled. Sorry, anything that isn't on Disney Plus is gone now. Yeah, very nice. You did your little stories. You brought us some money. Now go away.
And very cute, but come on.
We want all the good stuff. As soon as that Netflix license expires, trust me, we're recasting all of them as well. And, yeah, anyway, we'll see.
I love the fact that just going into the Falcon and the Winter Soldier, already the stakes are raised now. Like, you know, what we know what is possible with a Marvel TV show. So whichever was going to be second up, if this one, which obviously has stuck the landing that, and, you know, made such a big impact on the ongoing story, that means that we're set up for that with Falcon and Winter Soldier. We know that everything it can do and everything it can do to progress the story. And I think that's what's really exciting now going into that, because to be honest with you, not that I didn't know that Falcon the Winter Soldier was going to be great, but there was nothing in the trailer which made me go, oh, I see what an amazing story that is. Whereas with WandaVision, it seemed spectacular from, oh, what the hell are they doing in the sitcom world? That's something really weird and avant-garde. Whereas now Falcon the Winter Soldier, it's like, oh yeah, no, they can do something really snacky with that.
I think I might be right in saying that the running order was meant to be the other way around, but because of delays due to COVID and everything, WandaVision, maybe it didn't need as much post-production, I don't know. But I'm pretty sure when they first announced it, and I may be totally wrong, and I apologise if I am, but, and that would make sense if they'd have gone first with Falcon and Winter Soldier, more, you know, more of a traditional straight-up action show. And then they go, oh, you like that, right? Well, we've got something a bit weirder. Do you want to try this? And so what I'm worried about is, because I'm sure it'll be great, but you know, now that we've had this, like you say, with all this stuff, if it is just a straight up action adventure show, we might be like, oh, well, it was good, but you know, why don't you do some of that weird stuff?
I think, yeah, I mean, I think probably we're going to get less weird, but what I'm hoping it is that whereas this sets up one corner of the sky, and I wouldn't be very surprised if Doctor Strange 2 starts with Wanda, Doctor Strange, and then they have to bring in Agatha, and you kind of got this kind of like very kind of witchy group kind of going on, which leads into the multiverse. I wouldn't be surprised if Falcon and the Winter Soldier sets up another corner of the sky. So as you say, like we also got like Monica Rambeau set up the Secret Invasion. I'm betting they set up something completely different with another area, which maybe either feeds into the same thing or feeds into something completely separate. So I think it would be surprising if it wasn't more action-y adventure, less weird, which Loki is probably going to go more into the weird and maybe even feed into somehow like the witchiness of it all later. I think this is going to feed into something completely different. Your thoughts, Paul?
Yeah, I mean, coming back to what James was saying sort of thing, I think the original announcement was Falcon and Winter Soldier and Loki, and then WandaVision sort of came along sort of a fair bit later as an announcement. So I think, yeah, as you say, I think in terms of order, I think they have shifted them around. I think it's Loki that I think is really going to open up this whole multiverse side of things. I mean, certainly from the trailer I've seen from that, that does kind of imply that he's just skipping from almost like universe and dimension to dimension. So I think that's probably going to, well, you know, my theory is that that's going to lead much more into the Doctor Strange movie sort of thing. And if anything, that's where you may get some kind of appearance by Wanda sort of thing. It would make more sense to fit into that show than I think, you know, Falcon and Winter Soldier, which I think is going to be much more, you know, sort of threat-based, military-based, action-based kind of series. I think it's a different feel to what we've seen sort of thing. But I mean, with WandaVision, you know, at the beginning when I first started to watch it, I had doubts whether this was going to work, where it was going to go, and whether it was just going to peter out. And it just gained momentum as it went along. So it's, you know, if they've got the confidence to do that and try something different and pull it off, then I don't think there's anything stopping them. So
yeah, I mean, I think certainly that it's what I love about this is when obviously Endgame happened, we were so satisfied with that, and we knew though that was the end of one complete story, and they were talking about all the new characters they were going to bring in. How smart is it to bring in some characters from the existing universe, some of which were kind of like second characters? So Wanda and the Vision really weren't primary characters. They weren't brought to the forefront that much. They had really big roles sometimes, but they weren't the foremost characters. Loki obviously has been a bit more, but kind of in a psychic role. He's going to get kind of front and center for at least a little while. And then Falcon and Winter Soldier, which were the sidekicks to Captain America. And you bring those people forward as our familiar faces to then introduce us to a world where you introduce the Fantastic Four, the X-Men, the Eternals, all these kind of things we know is coming down the pike.
I just think
it's so smart.
Yeah, I think you've got to do that, though, because I think if anything that the X-Men movies have shown you is that things like X-Men, you know, Days of Future Past is a much more satisfying film because it's got the Wolverine in it, and you've got Hugh Jackman who carries it across. I think when you start looking at the other X-Men First Class and Apocalypse and Dark Phoenix and something, they're less satisfying movies because you have got a brand new cast that you really haven't got a great deal of connection with, or they're just reinventions of the characters that you've seen before. And, you know, and I think, as a sort of cinematic success, they haven't been as successful because of that. Whereas I think if you've, you know, if Marvel are now starting to take some of those characters that are established, or, you know, even if they're more of a side role, they're not the main leads, but you know them enough and you have enough backstory to then carry you through into new shows, and they can, you know, and they can help launch, as you say, new shows or new films or new characters. Because I think Marvel are in a, you know, where you've got Endgame and you've sort of wrapped up that part of it, you know, and all those stories, and you've brought them all together and you've tied up a lot of loose ends. I think now trying to launch a whole new load of films with a new load of characters you're going to have a lot of, you could have a lot of flops in that where people just don't engage or just don't buy into characters that they're just not familiar with in the same way they were familiar with, you know, Captain America or Iron Man, you know, who are the mainstream characters that most people, whether they're comic followers or not, sort of thing, are much more familiar with.
Yeah. Look, we're going to wrap up this now. One thing before I forget, Nicola, who was due to join me last week, unfortunately kind of was fallen by a headache. She sort of said the answer to the big question which we had last week, which was surrounding in tribute to WandaVision, which world would you get stuck in and with who? She said that she chose Buffy, and that was because she'd watched it with her daughter Danielle when she was a kid, and then now when she's older, they're rewatching it. It's kind of a lovely parallel, and Buffy's such a wonderful, strong character. She said she could be Buffy, and then her daughter could be Willow. I said, "Oh, so you're gonna like you're just gonna throw me in there as Giles or something like that?" Because you'd already established apparently Benny gets to be Angel / Angelus, which, given when he does go a bit mad and go, he does sort of seem more like Angelus. I will give her that. I said, "So who am I going to be?" And apparently I'm going to be Spike. And I said, "Cool. So I get to make out with Drusilla before I then get with you. Score." Apparently that's not the answer I was meant to give. Seemed fair. She's there, not me.
Who's playing Drusilla? I mean, if she's casting Benny as Angel, you know, you don't know.
Okay, look, let's not go into that.
I'll fix it all for you there.
So anyway, guys, yeah, we've got a big question this week, though, as we're, like, as this goes out on the radio on Thursday, this little chat, the big question of the week is, given that it's International Women's Day today as we're recording this, and 2 days ago, because Thursday is this, or 3 days ago, whichever day it is, on Thursday when this goes out on radio, which woman of history, or, like, fictional or real, inspired you the most? We'll go to James, because I think you had an idea, because you were asking if it had to be famous. So I said, whatever you think.
Oh, yeah. Well, I imagine a lot of people are going to do this and go with people in the family, but I was going to go with my granny because she, technically, she wasn't a blood relation to me. She's my dad's stepmom, but she was, like, the head of our family and brought everybody together so much and was so loving to everybody. And, like, even my cousin, who's on my mum's side, so he's no relation whatsoever to my granny, called my granny Granny, you know, and that was just the sort of woman she was. You know, she was so embracing of everybody. So she probably is the woman I've looked up to most.
By the way, just unless I've written a message and I'm not aware of it, I think Nicola might have put a message in on the group because it comes through as the Dr. Squee Show. James or Paul, the Drusilla part is still open if you're interested in auditioning.
Does that mean I've got a cop off for you? Wait a minute. So Drusilla gets it on with Angel as well. So that means we'd have to kiss Benny as well. So it's just getting crazier.
And creepier.
Yeah.
And who's Dottie playing all this? She's going to be jealous. She isn't casting something.
Okay, I'll just play Jonathan.
Okay, sorry, Paul, not as Drusilla, but Paul, who would you say, like, who's your inspirational woman you'd like to put forward?
I mean, it is going to be very cliche, but it's going to be my mum. It's as simple as that. It's, you know, it's that female role that sets you up with a moral compass to go through life, you know, and as teaches you sort of, you know, like, you know, compassion, caring for, you know, animals, other people, all those kind of good things. Also those things that she indirectly tells you, you know, talk you sort of thing, that, you know, as a woman who spent most of her life stressing about most things, it taught me not to stress about things. And, you know, you picked up all those cues, and that's the thing. It's that person you always turn to. It's that person you always go to in your life. And like James said, sort of thing, and, you know, and her mum before her, you know, my gran sort of thing, was exactly the same. She was the person that you went to, you know, if you wanted a question answered or you wanted advice on something, then those were, you know, then they had much more of a formative role, I think, growing up. And I think you see that with an awful lot of children sort of thing. I'm not saying dads aren't important, but I think it's, a lot of the time, dads are still, and certainly when I was growing up, were out at work and at home most of the time. So it was the mum that was doing all those duties.
Yeah.
And that's what defines you a lot of the time. So.
And I think it's really important for men, like, I'm going to get like a little bit serious for a second, but to talk about, like, we all talk about kind of how the parent of the same gender as us, because they're in obvious ways the template for us as we go into the world, inspires us. But like, I'm hugely inspired by my mum. Like, you know, I think I saw it with my dad more when he was alive, just because, again, that's kind of the template of who you're going to be. With my mum, she is as stubborn as hell. She likes a good drink, of course, which, you know, I don't object to either. And just the sheer, in a really good way, the sheer bloody-mindedness it took to reinvent her life when my dad passed away. Like, the amount of times when I wanted her to do this, that, and the other for her own good, like for her own protection. She's in her 80s now, and she is still living in a place with kind of two sets of stairs, living on top floor above the shop which she and my dad own and ran. And she refuses to move out. And, like, you know, every time I've thought for her own safety, I want her to, and I kind of like still a little bit stick by that. She bloody mindless is going, no, I can cope. I can do this, that, and the other. I can do more than you think. And she's proven me wrong. And I kind of love that about her, that she's proved what someone in their 80s can do. And I aspire to that as kind of I get old and grumpy, is to be equally as bloody minded as and refusing to listen to anyone about my care. And it just shows you kind of like there will be a day where sadly I win that argument, but I don't think it'll be for a long time yet. And I'd like to give a shout out also to her predecessor, my great auntie Isabel over in Ireland, who died at 105. And I've told this story on the show before, but it's kind of, it bears repeating. We were over there for our 100th birthday over in Ireland, where my mum's from, in Port, well, just down the road from Port Rush in Coleraine. And we went to the kind of home where she was, and the mayor was there to kind of do his usual thing of visiting the care homes when someone passes 100 and, you know, go, well done. Had some camera people and stuff. And the mayor was sat around, and he'd been talking to Auntie Isabel for a little while. And then he turned around and started talking to someone else. And Auntie Isabel just sat there next to him. And just suddenly, like, no one else really watching, but she just suddenly starts staring at his gold chain, and he just starts grabbing it and looking at it as if, like, don't worry, there's a person attached to this. I'll just start looking at this. I'm 100. Who's going to stop me? And eventually he kind of, like, can't help but notice that she's doing this. I've been watching this whole interaction fascinated. And it's, like, almost like he's trying to ignore it for a minute because it would be rude to pay attention to it. But eventually he finishes his conversation, goes, sorry, can I help you at all? She goes, this, it. How old is it? And he goes, oh, I don't know. Maybe 50, 60 years old. And she goes, ah, puts it down, like, gives a little pat and goes, not so old then. And the kicker about this is she didn't even realize it was funny for a second, because she was completely stony faced when she said that. Then everyone starts laughing. She turns around and goes, ah, like, yeah, now I knew that was funny. I wasn't doing that seriously at all. Because she's 100. Of course, that's nothing. Anyway, if you're watching this, please do write and tell us your favorite woman who's kind of inspired you over the years. We'll just leave it as open as that. And please do listen to the radio show. We'll read out your answers and loads of others, and we'll play a bit of music, and I will have a guest, which by then I'll have actually arranged, because not that I leave these things to the last minute, you know. But please, for now, thank my guest for this little video version of the Dr. Squeeze show. Thanks, first of all, to James King from at Retrek Pod. What's happening in the world of Retrek this week?
Oh, we're talking about the controversial episode 2 Vix from Voyager. So we've been focusing on Captain Janeway, and that's arguably one of her, well, depending on which way you look at it, she makes either a very good decision or a very bad decision. And we're going to be talking about that episode, so that should be fun.
And it's worth saying for anyone who doesn't know, like, it is a really cool episode. I think even if you're not a sci-fi fan, it's kind of such an original conceit of having two people blending into one, and then do they have a right as the new person or the two people they used to be? And just wonderful.
Yes.
Paul G, is anything happening with Who News at the moment?
Well, actually, in this lull between actually when the show's on, which is so the news is fairly quiet, I'm actually taking the opportunity to revamp the app. So there is a lot of development work going on. There will be a new version, which is I've been promising for years now, but it is actually starting to form up nicely now. So so keep your eyes peeled, and there may be a few announcements on Twitter in the future. So
excellent. Please, download the app. Like, you can get a free version, which you can download now, and then for a mere couple of quid, I think it is, you can get the
$1.49, less than a cup of coffee, I think. So it's...
come on, for the full ad-free version, which just aggregates every place which whispers, like, then it will appear on Who News. That's how it works, I'm pretty sure. I'm not exaggerating there.
No, that's true.
Guys, actually, look, we're going out of this. Like, if you guys got a tune you'd like to throw out to any woman in your life, we can do both if you've each got one. Not a woman, but a track, I mean.
Have you got a song that says, sorry, I've been on the podcast too long, I will come down and make you tea?
No, if I had that one, I would be playing it myself. Go on, just name a track for Chloe.
Anything by Youngblood. She's really into Youngblood at the moment. Anarchist. He did a song called Anarchist.
We're going to hear Anarchist from Youngblood, followed by Paul.
Forever in Electric Dreams.
That's going out to Eunice.
That is, yep.
So, Youngblood and...
Anarchist.
And then Together in Electric Dreams. Here goes.
Locked me in a room since I was young. I've never seen a morning sun come up. I'm employee of the month at a Ritalin club.
That was Together in Electric Dreams by Phil Oakley and Giorgio Moroder. And for that, you heard me speaking to James King and Paul G from just a couple of days ago about that wonderful finale of WandaVision. So now we're over to our other interview for this week. This was with Mackenzie Floor, who is an award-winning, a multiple award-winning author of the Right of One series. She spoke to me about that, her work on the Legend of the Traveling TARDIS podcast, as well as how she's surviving in this lockdown world, as well as so much else. Please enjoy this interview recorded just yesterday with Mackenzie.
So, multi-award-winning author of the popular young adult fantasy series, The Right of Ones, a storyteller at heart, she loves to inspire the imagination. Her previous published works have included The Right of Ones, The Rapes of Abdomination, if I've got that word even close, The Binge Watcher's Guide to Doctor Who, History of Doctor Who and the First Female Doctor, and her short stories appear in the anthology collections The Whispered Tales of Graves Grove, best-selling, and Unknown Realms. Please welcome to the Doctor Squee Show, before I butcher any more words, Mackenzie Floor.
Hello.
How are you doing, Mackenzie?
Good.
I said some of those words right, I think.
Yeah, you got most of it right.
It's been a long week. I can't even manage to trim my beard successfully this week. Like, you know, you were saying before we came on that your wife had done your hair. Like, it's a good job I didn't try any amateur hairdressing. I can't even manage a beard trim.
Yeah, and that was, I have to get it cut again because it just, you know, we're allowed to here in America to go into get your hair cut. But I'll be honest, I just don't trust the general audience out there without having a vaccine. I just don't. And it's probably because my wife is actually in healthcare on the front line. So I'm looking more, even though she's gotten already the vaccine, I still just, I just don't trust people.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest with you, it doesn't seem like you're open in America due to any better numbers than us over here.
Yeah.
By the way, I don't know what Christian from The Legend of the Traveling TARDIS is saying about me, but screw you, animal. Sure. Which animal in specific? You'll have to let me know, Christian. So, yeah, of course, like one of your partners, which you work with, is the Legend of the Traveling TARDIS. You're a regular contributor. Are you on every episode now? I think you were a contributor to begin with. Am I getting any of this correct?
Well, I'm in quite a few, though. Recently, I haven't been on as many just because I want to have more people on there that are not, you know, just me always all the time. So I'm more wanting to make sure that other people have equal opportunities. So, yeah. And new voices. Awesome.
Yeah. Tell us a bit about The Legend of the Traveling TARDIS. Now the Gallifrey Stands is no more. The best Doctor Who podcast.
Yeah. So The Legend of the Traveling TARDIS is actually Christian's baby. And it started about, if I recall, about 2 years ago, maybe even 3 years ago at this point. And it was just really just a talk show. And then it became more of, when COVID happened, it became more of an interview type of show where we got to bring on people from Doctor Who. And it's since then has grown. We have over 50,000 likes on Facebook and subscribers as well. So it's awesome. We've got a partnership with Wizard World Conventions here in America. And we're working exclusively with Doctor Who Worlds Apart with their awesome trading card game that's going to be coming up.
That's amazing. And yeah, just to have seen, by the way, just big round of applause to Christian and to all of you there at the Legend of the Traveling TARDIS with everything you've done. It's amazing. And he puts what Mackenzie said.
Yeah.
There you go. It's that. But like, come on, let's talk a bit about yourself. So like, I'm just looking at, and pardon me that the setup's a bit weird for anyone watching, that I'm looking to the side to read stuff. I had a whole setup. Everything went wrong. My internet went down, so I'm going by a 4G. Like, it's a whole thing. Anyway, I'm going to look awkwardly to my side as I read this, but your award list on here is just sick. Like 2017, Forward Indies Book of the Year Awards Silver Medal winner, Fantasy. 2018, International Book Awards finalist in the Fiction Fantasy category, I'm taking it. Mm-hmm. 2018, Imagine Awards for Best Fantasy Novel. 2018, Literary Classic Awards Gold Medal winner, Best Young Adult Fantasy Novel. 2019, Top 10 finalist in Fantasy in the Author Elite Awards. And 2020, Honorary Mention Science Fiction Fantasy in the Royal Dragonfly Awards. So not just like a plethora of awards, just one after the other, year after year. I mean, just wow, what a journey you've been on over the last few years.
Yeah, and it kind of, which is just really kind of strange, is my journey right now as the author of that series is in a way going very similar to Murta's journey in the actual series itself, though not quite the same. He's actually a author, he's a doctor, basically, from back in the medieval time. So we're looking at like 13th century Ireland. And in that series, he has a plague, which, ironically, it's very similar to COVID-19. So there is a similarity where back then people thought it was a hoax with when it comes to plagues back then. And I'm speaking over here with the Black Plague specifically. You had people where instead of just wearing masks, they had this big white stick they would come around. They'd have that would show force the social distancing of the 6 feet, and you would have to stick it out to somebody if they were too close to you. So it's just
can we bring those back, please?
Yeah.
sorry, I cut you off there, but sorry, I'm putting horse before cart here though. Before all the awards, before everything else, I love the fact that the Rite of Wands is so obviously inspired not only by these wonderful worlds of fantasy, which we all love, there is also obviously a very huge dollop of history, so much inspiration from the zeitgeist. Where do you get started on the journey of thinking about, where does it first occur to you, the Rite of Wands?
Oh gosh. Ironically, it was through the Lord of the Rings of all things. There was back in, let's see, it was 2002, I think it was, there was a In the state of Indiana, there was a museum that was showing all of the sets and accessories from the Lord of the Rings trilogy. And I decided that I would go see it because I was really a big Lord of the Ring buff. I still am a Lord of the Ring buff when it comes to it. And while I was going there, it was kind of like what happened to J.K. Rowling, where she was on a train and had this kind of like, boom, I passed by a sign and there was the Rite of Wands series. So I couldn't tell you what that sign said. No idea. I don't remember it. All I remember was, this is the Rite of Wands. But the problem was the main character didn't actually become Prant until 2014. So for those who are maybe working on a book and you're having problems because it's taking you forever or taking multiple years and you're just like, oh, I'm never going to finish this. Don't stop. Literally, it took me a decade to get the first Rite of the Wands book actually written. And I'm still working on that series. That series is going to be 7 books by the time it's done. And I've only published the first 2. So there's still a long way to go.
And how do you go from that initial idea? And how much does, like, was it straight away? Like, you know, you say boom, but was it a kind of fully fledged story in your head? Did it kind of just all come together just straight away? Or has it kind of evolved as you've been writing it?
It's evolved as it's come to writing it. Originally, the main character, Myrta, and his family weren't even in my original rough draft. He didn't show up until 2014. And it was because I was going through the series. And at one point, I thought it was a dead book because it was just, I had this great idea. It wasn't going anywhere. I couldn't really connect to the characters. And then Wizard World, which is one of our partners, ironically, for the Traveling TARDIS, had this amazing opportunity where for the first time, they had a doctor in Chicago and they had Matt Smith. And I said to my wife, oh, I'm like, do you want to meet a doctor? I mean, we hadn't met any actors from Doctor Who before. So she's like, well, yeah, let's go spend the day in Chicago, go drive there, drive back in one day and go meet Matt. So we did. And that is when Myrta McKinnon literally came about.
I don't have one of yours, but I've got a one to hand. Also, yeah. Got Sonic in case it goes in that direction, yes, for the conversation.
I've got Sonic too, though.
If we touch him to the screen, this.
Ooh. Well, by that, I'll have to Sonic you that way.
Ah. Oh, I will match any device you have. Can you tell it's two nerds speaking?
Great.
Oh, that's funny. So, just completely derailed myself, but yeah, Rite of Wands. So you kind of got these kind of all ideas together. The thing which I am always kind of really impressed with in an ever busy world of fantasy and an ever popular world of fantasy, it's kind of great to have seen in our lifetimes, because I'm guessing you're around the same age as me. I won't ask because that's polite. But I love the fact that kind of sci-fi has kind of gone on a journey, and fantasy of when we were kids, or certainly when I was, that it was kind of a shunned thing. If you were a Doctor Who fan, you did not say this in public. You had to have some sort of secret handshake to admit it to, you know, your friends in the playground. Now the playground is full of Sonic screwdrivers and people kind of just reveling in the series, which is great. But with that busyness of the world of sci-fi and people being influenced by all these things, how do you make sure your property is unique? How do you make those differentiators between the Rite of Wands and, say, Harry Potter, Doctor Who, all these other wonderful properties?
Yeah. Well, for there, it comes to your unique world. And with Rite of Wands, its unique world is that each wizard and witch are not born with their powers. They have to earn them. And they have to go through what's called the Rite of Wands ceremony, which is a little bit like Christmas Carol. So you'll get a glimpse of your past, your present, and your future. And for Myrta, he actually saw that he was going to die of a plague. And so he becomes literally obsessed with wanting to change his destiny. And that's really more of what the whole story is. It's about destiny and about fate versus destiny. And you making your own choices versus what is actually fate. Can you change your history? Is it possible to do that? We don't know. It's one of those things.
It's lovely to have the mystery kind of spun out as well. Yeah, you want to keep people guessing. And with that, when you're kind of like creating the first book, when you were writing the first book, was it already in your head like this is going to be a series? You're just kind of betting on yourself that, I'm going to like leave it so that it's going to be a whole series of books?
Yeah, I did originally envision it to be 3 books, though, as the series started to be writing itself, literally through Myrta's character, it became way more. I actually had a conversation a couple years ago with the publisher. I go, it kind of went Game of Thrones on me. And they're like, oh, that's not a bad thing.
Oh, that's wonderful. And do you find also that when you're kind of writing, are you someone who kind of managed to stick to the plan? Because I find the second that I start writing, just whatever I had in my head, it's kind of like it goes off in that direction. And it's almost like I've got to have the plan in my head to go away from, because I can't just start writing with really nothing in my head. That rarely happens. I've usually got an idea in my head, which I then kind of my head ignores somehow. How does it work with you with the process?
Yeah, I'm what's considered a planter, which means that I outline, but then I also will write by the seat of my pants. So I don't necessarily follow that outline to a T when I'm writing. Now, if I'm doing screenwriting, which is what I'm doing actually right now, I'm working on making the transforming the Rite of Wands into a 5-year series for on TV. And that's a little bit different, where you have to have that structure as certain ways that things have to be told in a certain way. So there, it makes it a little bit more challenging for me, but also exciting because I get to really explore different areas that aren't in the book or haven't been seen yet in the book that are coming. And now I retold the story in a different way, but still keeps the key idea and the story in sync, even though it might not happen the same way.
That's brilliant. And did you, like, so yeah, let's take it. So you've written the kind of the first Rite of Wands book. How do you then kind of sell it? How do you go out there and find kind of a producer for it, or a kind of, sorry, distributor for it?
Well,
publisher, that's the word I'm looking for. I knew those one.
In that case, I actually, it was again, a wizard. It was another Wizard World Chicago convention where I was walking through Artist Alley and I met somebody who had heard about my wand, and she thought it was really cool. Now, for those who might not be able to see it really well, this is actually crafted by those who made the Harry Potter wands for the films, and they specifically created the wand for Myrta. I gave them a drawing. I go, hey, could you maybe like replicate it? So that was really the selling point. Is it, this particular publisher was like, we've never seen an author do that before. Go out and spend so much money. I mean, that thing, just to get an idea of the value of that, where it just being a single wand, it's the equivalent of the real sonic screwdriver 3 times over. So, yeah, it was big. And then it just happened that I was at a convention and I gave it to Matt because I'm like, you know what? This is Myrta's wand. I'm writing the character for Matt Smith. So naturally, I would like to have a little bit of kind of like his DNA a little bit into the wand, just so for, you know, for good luck, good measure.
Are you trying to clone Matt Smith? Be honest now.
No, just as a character.
Okay. Just checking.
I'm married, you know.
That doesn't mean you couldn't have a pet Matt Smith clone.
I could, you know. Well, considering Myrta answers always with his voice, it is odd, you know. I need to. It seems like I would have to have the real Matt in my life, you know. Somehow. And so that's what I did, is I brought the wand to him, and that story is a whole nother story of itself, because it was so amazing to watch him literally transform almost into a schoolboy kid as he's flinging the wand around. And then later on I found out that he actually was wanting to be a wizard, always wanted to be, and was supposed to actually be in Merlin, and there were the BBC Merlin. He actually was cast originally as Merlin, and Amy Pond, Catherine Gillian, Karen Gillian, excuse me, she was actually supposed to be Guinevere. So it just happened that
it was
fated. Yeah, it was fated.
Fated they were meant to work together.
Yeah.
So, like, you've got the first book, kind of, it's gone to the publishers. What's that moment like? I just love to speak to an author about that moment when they first kind of see their book in print and you first get it back.
Oh my gosh, it's surreal. You have, it's like, it's your baby. That's literally what it's like. It's like you're giving birth to a baby and it's your book. So you're very proud of it and you're protective of it. And you want to be able to tell people all about your book. And then you come into the reality that most people that are your friends and family are like, so you wrote a book. Okay, tell me something else. That's literally how it was for me. Most of my friends are like, oh, that's cool. So that was like, okay, so already I'm already at a challenge where I have to figure out who is my audience and how do I sell this to people. If I can't even get my own friends or family to pick up the book, how the heck am I expecting a stranger to do it?
And how do you go about that? How do you go about kind of something? What I'm loving kind of picking up from your energy, what I always kind of do from the kind of brief interactions we've had in the past, is that you seem someone who's always so willing to sell themselves, to kind of like put themselves out there. Does that help when you're kind of selling, I guess?
Yeah. In fact, my book won't sell unless I'm actually there. It for the past three, well, I'd say 4 years, except for last year, because last year was just a dud altogether. My books, about 98% of the time, always sells when I'm literally there, because people want to, usually people come up and they're like, where's that wand? I want to hold that wand. I want so that there will be the wand, or they will see, be walking around Artist Alley and they'll be like, oh, I know that cover. I know that. Who are you? So most people say, I don't know who you are, but I know that book. And then when I say, oh, well, that's, I'm the author. They're like, no. Yeah. So that's kind of just really strange too. And I had one person literally almost go goo goo gaga, to put it in better terms there. And that was different too, because I'm like, just wrote a book. I mean, it's just a book. But to them, it meant a lot. So it's really neat to connect with people.
That must be so gratifying to have that moment with the fans.
Yes.
Amazing. So, like you mentioned about the kind of upcoming series which you're working on at the moment, is there anything you can tell us? Is there anyone attached at the moment? Any juicy details?
Well, I wrote the first script, I could say that, and it did go to a producer, and then it got turned down because it was too fantastical, which is kind of funny because it's fantasy. So, I'm like, well, that really doesn't make much sense. And then I am now actually this upcoming Saturday, I'm actually doing a consultation with a executive who specializes in fantasy, and she's going to give me some little tidbits of how, what I can do to make it so it is absolutely unresistible, which I really do feel it's very close to that. The series does have that way of capturing people. It's just that the biggest thing I've heard is I need to expand on Myrta, and he was already in 75% of the script, and now the people are saying, well, you need to have him more in there. I'm like, goodness gracious, I'm going to have to treat this like a Doctor Who episode where the character's there the whole time.
Speaking of Doctor Who, kind of mentioned the book that you wrote about the first female Doctor, amongst other Doctor Who things in there. So one thing which we do every week on my radio show, which this is going to be going out the audio as part of, is we have a big question of the week. And this week it is about women who've inspired you. Tell us a little bit about some women who've inspired you along the way.
Well, this is actually a very interesting story, because I actually got to work for this person about a decade ago. So it was really cool. And for those who are into soap operas and watch The Young and Restless specifically, Melanie Thomas Scott, who plays Nikki Newman, she's been there since 1979 and has played that character consistently. For me, her character was inspirational to me, especially during my teen years. I'm an only child. I grew up with very conservative parents, very restrictive parents, but yet they did allow me to be creative. However, there was a lot of times where I dealt with depression. I went to a school where they were abusive to me, both physically and mentally. My dad, unfortunately, is also mentally abusive. So it had it both ways, and having to witness that, especially going towards my mother. We actually had a conversation. She asked me one time, well, what's the very first thing you can remember? And I said, honestly, it's dad screaming, sign the papers, sign the papers. And just, you know, being just, and she couldn't believe it. She's like, I'm like, can't believe that you actually remember that. And that's your earliest memory. I said, yeah, that's my earliest memory. So it's that type of atmosphere. And soap operas have this way of whatever's going on in your life, it can kind of make it seem like what your problems are nothing compared to these soap opera characters. And that was very true for Nikki Newman. She was a stripper who came from nothing, met this Prince Charming, Victor Newman, and he swept her away. And that was very inspirational, seeing two strong, you could say, parental figures dealing with their own dramas, with their own families, and yet they're able to overcome everything. Yes, they got divorced multiple times, but they always found each way back to each other. So it's like it was the perfect Cinderella story. And I loved Nikki so much that I had actually, that was my first web design project. I started doing a fan site for her, because at that time, you know, this is when dial-up was going around, so there was nothing out there. There was really nothing about Nikki or Melody in particular. And a couple of years after, I got this email out of the blue and it said, I know you're not going to believe it's me, but I was on your website and I'd like you to connect with my publicist. And that's kind of where things went. Literally, I got, after that, I didn't hear anything from anybody for a couple months. The next thing is I'm getting a phone call from Hollywood saying, hey, we heard that you're going to be doing a website for Melody Thomas Scott. We'd like to fly you out to California and appear on the Soap Opera Network, and be there. And she's going to be there, and she has no idea that you're going to be there too, so you can meet each other. And that ended up turning into going into Entertainment Tonight, to seeing her doing with Edward J. Scott, which is her husband. They got to renew their vows. I got to go to the set of The Young and Restless. I got to see what it was like in the day of a celebrity of a soap opera star, and it's just like, wow.
That's amazing. And it really just goes to show kind of what we've been a little bit talking about here, is that if you believe in yourself and you put yourself out there, and if you put yourself into something you love, such as kind of The Young and the Restless or Doctor Who, any of these things, what you can do as a result of it, what you can like spin that into. So you're doing this website just out of love for the show and love for this this actor and this character. And then you end up going to Hollywood as a result of it.
Yeah. It was like, what? No one would believe that. It's like, really? Out of college, that's exactly what I did. My internship was doing that website, going to getting that experience. And it was nice to gain actual. I only got to go there for one day on the set, but that one day was enough so that I could see how things actually run behind, how different it was and how much more advanced it is. Like, I had no idea that they would film almost 3 months ahead of what actually appears on television, though I wonder now how that is with COVID and how far advanced they are now. But it was really cool. And then you get to seeing it filmed, and then you have to be like, oh, hush, hush, because you can't talk about what you actually saw.
Wow. By the way, if anyone's watching, if you've got any women who've inspired you over this, drop it in the chat. We'll like read out here. Now, for the last time we spoke, it was actually for an event I did called Squeefest, which was raising money for charity. And we did a kind of mental health little check-in with Diversely Geek. I just wanted to kind of check in with you because I love how kind of honest and kind of open you are online, talking about so many kind of mental health issues around LGBTQ. And all this kind of stuff, which everyone's having to deal with at the most unbelievable time in our lives, certainly, yeah, to put it mildly. How are you doing? How do you cope? And, you know, how's it been dealing with all of that at the same time? Now, what you say about the former president of America who's just left office, certainly his administration didn't forward the rights of LGBTQ.
No.
How's all that's been for you kind of dealing with all that?
It honestly has been, for anything about the ex-president, nothing that he did really surprised me. Even when it came to January 6th, when there was that big attack on our Capitol, I was saying, when he got elected, I said something like that was going to happen. It just, he had that narcissist type of personality, all about me. Never got away or never got punished for anything bad that he could possibly do or be accountable for anything. It was just more like, oh, it was that person's fault, or it's that person's fault. It's Obama's fault. You know, it's like the ridiculousness of that, but not actually realizing that what he really was doing was bringing out the hate that we see. And we see this in fandom. We see this in Doctor Who with right now, where all these people are just throwing all this hate on Jodie since she became the female doctor, because God forbid the doctor becomes female. Whoa, you know. So you have that, and then you get this plague out of absolutely nowhere, which for me, I at the very beginning, I was really scared. I even at one point, I actually wrote out my will. I've never written a will before, but I wrote it out because I thought I was going to die. And then a literary agent, which is how this screenplay comes into effect, she said to me, you know what? What you're going through right now, your main character, you're living what he lived through back in the medieval times, except you're experiencing it now. All those raw emotions, that's what he's feeling. You need to be able to bring this. This is the time now to bring this into a screenplay so that other people can learn from him and hang on to him like you have for so long to bring you comfort through this whole thing. And that's really what I did. And the one thing too, and I'm going to share this because this is something that I really, every day I say this to myself too, about any type of situation. There is a, so this is a shout out to Granny on Twitch. She says, she enters streams every time with the three questions. If you answer the three questions, so what it is about you, what it is about your the situation, and what is about like plain day, what is it? If you can answer those three questions, honestly, you can get through most things in life, if not everything. And there is something that I'm not able to disclose that's having to do with my series right now. And that's literally, I'm getting through it because I'm thinking, this is what's meant to happen. We just got to go with the territory and just, we'll get through this.
Okay, but like, you know, seeing as your book has ended up being a bit prosthetic, like to what's happened, could your next book be about the economy recovering and like us all having loads of money? And could you just write something along those lines? We'd be really grateful and everyone being healthy now. Could you write that into a book next?
Yeah, I actually get teased about that. They're like, you're like, Mackenzie, why did you write about a plague in your book? I'm like, but I didn't know it was 3 years ago. I literally published a book in 2017. So no, I didn't start writing the book when COVID-19 happened. No, I actually wrote this right prior to that.
Maybe the recently dethroned emperor going to, you know, to the dungeon of some description.
Yeah, we can definitely have something like that.
You can put all that sort of thing. Maybe like a smaller kingdom a few, like 100 miles away. Like maybe their leader kind of somehow going away would be like good for me anyway.
Yeah, that would be fantastic.
Love you, Boris. No, I really don't. Anyway, that's another story. Thank you so much for joining me today. It's been absolutely wonderful. Please, guys, check out The Legend of the Traveling TARDIS wherever you get your podcasts, and subscribe on Facebook, YouTube, and everywhere where that glorious podcast is. Mackenzie, it's mackenziefloor.com, I believe, your website.
Yes. And if you want to know more about the Right of Wands in general, therightofwands.com. That's where you can find out all the information about, including to see a little bit of the script, Bible. Yeah, learn everything.
Check it out, guys. And if you want to listen to the audio of this, along with me, Paul G, and James King talking about the finale of WandaVision. So it's really a magic special this week. Please go to the Dr. Squee show on the bear.live every Thursday, 8 p.m. till 10 p.m. That's GMT. Please check out your local time. So in Mackenzie's time, which is EST, that would be 3 o'clock, I think. Look, just Google it. Like, it's 8 p.m. GMT.
We're 5 hours behind.
Yeah. Sounds about right. Yeah. Thank you very much for joining me. No one's written any women who inspire them, so I can only imagine people watching right now hate women. But like, that's not me. That's on you guys. Much love to everyone. Mackenzie, now, as this goes out on radio, like, is there a song you'd like to play for the special lady in your life?
Well, there is a song that I can think of, though the title of it is eluding me at the moment. But yeah.
Okay, so Mackenzie, after this, message me the song. And if you're listening on radio, this is the song she picked.
This is Paul Gross, and you're listening to The Bear. Thank you kindly.
Aretha Franklin, the Eurythmics. That was Sisters Are Doing It For Themselves. What an amazing banging tune. And before that, you heard The Script, and that was Superheroes, and that was going out to Mackenzie Floor and her good lady. So, look, we're nearly out of time here on the Bear.live on the Dr. Squee Show for this week, but I would be remiss if I left without telling you about a special event which we're being part of this Saturday. So it's the 13th of March. We're going to be part of Superpod 3. Now, this is the third Superpod and the third one which the Dr. Squee Show has been a proud member of. We're going to be going live both on the Bear.live as well as on internet radio stations across the UK, which are taking part in this unique event from the Bear.live. And we're also going to be going out on video. Now, it's going to be a special event going from 8 a.m. in the morning till midnight. We've got a slot 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. where we're going to be having special guests, which are my friend Adam Colclough, who kind of goes by the name Jim Credible as his stage name, Laura Duff, an amazing stand-up comedian, and Adam is an amazing host and a presenter at sci-fi shows around the world and kind of stage events around the world. He's recently got a gig as a circus ringleader, which is just going to be amazing to talk about. And we're joined by a very special guest, which is the Pan Man, Martin Croft, from Britain's Got Talent. So it's just going to be such a great day, full of amazing shows. You do not want to miss it. Be right here at the Bear.live or watch us online. Go to superpod.co.uk to find more information. It's going to be an amazing day. So look, I'd like to thank all my guests tonight. First of all, my dear lady, Nicola Gosling, and my dog, Benny, for joining me at the beginning of the show. We've had Paul G from Who News, as well as James King from the Retrek podcast, joining us to talk about WandaVision and that wonderful finale. And of course, Mackenzie Floor, talking to us about the Rite of Wands and everything which she does. I've been Dr. Squeed, that was my show. And remember, guys, in a world we can be anything, please, be kind.
I'm not trying to win. I'm not doing this because I want to beat someone, or because I hate someone, or because I want to blame someone. It's not because it's fun. God knows it's not because it's easy. It's not even because it works, because it hardly ever does. I do what I do because it's right! Because it's decent, and above all, it's kind. It's just that, just kind. Hey, you know, maybe there's no point in any of this at all, but it's the best I can do. Why not? Just to the end. Just be kind.